Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and tonight's conversation is Bonnie Tischler, Assistant Commissioner for Office of Field Operations of the U.S. Customs Service. And joining me is Craig Petron, also with PricewaterhouseCoopers. Well, Bonnie, early in your career, you developed what is now known as the Women in Federal Law Enforcement Intra-Agency Committee. Can you tell us more about this organization, who its members are, and what its purpose is?
Sure, Paul. I basically had a concept in 1977 that was based on meeting a number of women who were in federal law enforcement positions. And women had just come on in 1971, and here they were on, and it was 6 years later, and they weren't getting any worse. Some of them had problems with the traditional problems you would associate with a job that's a 24-hour job, and things like daycare, getting married, having a date, what a concept. But the bottom line is that they were all having significant problems in terms of details, training, and getting promoted. And so a friend of mine was running the Women's Bureau over at what is now the Office of Personnel Management, and we had known each other through the Federal Women's Program for a number of years. And so she said, well, why don't you come over on a detail? This is just before I became an agent. Why don't you come over on a detail, and why don't you start something up? They had just started something called Women in Science, which I guess is still in existence today also. So I went over there. I gathered up some of the more senior people I knew in some of the other agencies, specifically Joanne Kotcher, for instance, who was with ATF and has just retired from them. And we put a committee together that was based on exploring why women were having obstacle problems within the criminal investigations area. That's all we were looking at back then. Well, now it's expanded to any law enforcement position within the realm of federal law enforcement. But in any event, they did a survey, and they talked to a lot of women, and they saw what their problems were. And it was pretty much in exactly what I was saying, training, details, getting promoted. And so it was called back then the Interagency Committee on Women in Law Enforcement, and it's changed since then, and it's just gone private now. At the time I put it together, Justice and Treasury co-sponsored it. But recently they decided it was too much of an advocacy group for the government to sponsor, and so it's gone private, just like Noble, which is the Black Law Enforcement Executive Organization, and some of the others. So people who belong to it are women who are, and men for that matter, who are involved in any of the federal agencies in the U.S. And also we have foreign membership, and state and locals belong to it as well.
Okay. Can you also then, going with that theme, talk about some of the challenges, and especially leadership challenges that female law enforcement officers face today? Earlier in the program, you mentioned the idea of credibility, respect, loyalty being important in leadership positions today. What unique challenges do female law enforcement officers have in obtaining those kinds of characteristics?
Well, I think these days is probably less true than when I first started out. But when women started out in the federal sector in law enforcement positions, there were so many apocryphal stories floating around. How could you possibly be out on surveillance with a female? People would question whether or not you were actually watching the event or messing around with the girl, quote unquote. You know, could a woman actually handle a gun? Would she back you up? In terms of a raid or some other enforcement activity. But that was 1971, and this is now. And women have been in a number of situations over the years that have proven the fact that they can handle the job just as well as their male counterparts. I think it's real important to touch the bases and ring the bells. I think it's important to our male counterparts. I think it's important to the women. I think that it's a credibility issue. I think you can't become a manager unless you've done the job, and the people who think they can skip the rungs of the ladder are sadly mistaken. I was not a first-line supervisor. It was during a time frame where I was bypassed for a first-line supervisory job, so I kind of worked around it in terms of becoming a program manager and then a branch chief. But which was a first-line supervisor, but just not out in the field. So that type of glass ceiling doesn't exist anymore. Women are becoming first-line supervisors. They are becoming second-line management. They are becoming executives. Almost all the agencies have female SACs right now, special agents in charge. And I just think the atmosphere is different.
So in other words, then it is important to actually do the various types of positions and jobs that everyone's expected to do as you work your way up through the ranks.
Yes, I think so. But I also think, you know, a lot of women come to me and they say, well, we'd really like your job. And I said, hey, you're welcome to it. But basically, they say, well, how did you get there? They went to some class and they talked about goals and stuff like that. And, you know, when I started out, I really didn't have the goal of being an assistant commissioner. I just wanted to do the very best job I could do as a senior special agent. That was my original goal. But as it was kind of an incremental thing, it was a pearls on a string. You know, I get a job and I think, well, I could do the next one. It was like just climbing a ladder rung by rung. Well, the women today really don't have to do that. They can, in fact, shoot for something a little bit beyond the next rung on the ladder. But for me, that wasn't possible. And I was just looking immediately about what was just ahead of me. And it was less scary that way, too. But it's easier for the women now that know that I and others like me are out in front of them and have already broken the ground for them.
You describe many of the things that have changed throughout your career in terms of acceptance of women, for example. Are there things that haven't changed?
I think, I don't know, I'd have to ask the women who are still out there in the trenches, so to speak. I think there are things that still have not changed for me. If I'm at a meeting, it's 99.9% male on the same gray and black and dark blue suits. It's a real treat when there's happens to be a woman either in another agency or somebody who's a peer at one of these meetings. Not too much has changed in that area, but of course I'm still on that first wave, and so hopefully another 5 years some of these women that are following up behind us will be out in these meetings as well. So I think in terms of seeing women as policymakers, not too much has changed. The women I talk to, the young women in customs who come to talk to me, claim that they're doing equally well alongside their male counterparts. So I think things have probably changed down at the bottom. There doesn't seem that much concern anymore about a woman taking away a guy's job, which was one of the concerns when I first came on. So the policymaking issue, I don't think much has changed. I think we'll see an incremental change over the next 5 years or so. But it's a density problem. The more women there are, the more women in the chain, the more women in the pipeline, and so forth and so on.
How did all these firsts or almost firsts affect you as a manager or developing your management skills?
If you're talking about role models, my role models were all male. And because they were in a command and control atmosphere back then, I followed suit. Now, when I tried to do some of the things that the fellows were doing, either, you know, perhaps out for drinks or you know, maybe some colorful language, I mean, it didn't work for me. So, I mean, I sort of fell back and regrouped and said, all right, you know, they're not going to let me be a woman, but on the other hand, I don't have to be like them either. So I just had to develop my own way of doing things. I am very forthright. And I used to think that there were only two ways you could actually survive within the federal sector in any jobs. And that was either to be so far out in front that nobody could touch you, or so Machiavellian that nobody could find you. And I never managed to achieve Machiavellian status. So unfortunately, I've sort of developed that reputation for honesty and being out front and pretty much telling it like it is. Although I've certainly over the past 10 years, I think, probably softened up the edges and become more diplomatic. But I still am a strong believer in that. And I have no patience for people who work for me who blow a lot of smoke at their management.
You mentioned you know, how you climbed the ladder. You went from rung to rung as you have gone through your career. Is there one rung of that ladder that kind of stands out, or an interesting story or situation that you found yourself in that particularly shaped your career and your understanding of leadership?
The thing that shaped me the most was getting that special agent in charge job down in Tampa. It was just a never before. I'd had a series of jobs, you know, first, and then I wound up in Tampa, and I had 250 people who reported to me, and I had to worry about them. And I had to worry about the 24-hour phone call that was going to come in saying somebody was injured, hurt, or perhaps dead. So I think that job probably let me evolve my management style into what it's become now.
It's time for a break. We'll be right back with more of the Business of Government Hour.